Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. I am John Pollock, back here with Wei Ting. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing? How you feeling?
I'm much better, significantly better. So, thank you. I appreciate your handling certain shows, some of which I had scheduled to be off regardless. And then Monday night, I was tapping after we had recorded two shows. I was asleep before Raw was over, so that was my Monday night. Can't say I was complaining. Good. It was kind of nice. Will not lie.
I'm happy to hear you took full advantage of Monday night off.
Yes, it was one of those where it helped to have the added sleep. You know, fluids, sleep. It helps every now and then.
All you need, really.
Yes, I listened back to Ask Away, and that was recorded Monday afternoon. Dude, my voice sounds like I'm like a chain smoker. If you listen.
I thought you held up all right, you know?
I didn't have any throat issues, but my voice definitely sounded... It's still not perfect, but I feel a million times better than I did. Sunday was a real struggle doing that TNA show, but here we are. People get sick. We move forward. How are you?
Doing okay. Yeah. Had a bit of a nap this afternoon, so certainly felt like I needed it. But feeling good. You know, I did a daily news update with Bruce Lord this afternoon, Nate yesterday. So I want to thank both of those guys. But we also had some contribution from you, of course, John, this afternoon, because you had a chance to go to the Collision Conference, didn't you?
I did. I went to the Collision Conference, which is like, I'm trying to describe what this would be. It would be like your spam folder was all represented by booths. At one conference, it's just really? A million different companies represented. There were so many people at this, but there was always
tech focused, right?
Yes. Tech focused of just, you know, tons of really interesting like panels going on, and they're all short. They're like 20-minute panels, and you kind of just, you know, it serves as like for networking. They do a really great job of like linking you up with people that, you know, you want to speak with, that reach out. They have this whole online network setup. Anyway, I was going there because Tony Khan was going to be speaking on Tuesday, as was Chris Cyborg from Bellator. She was going to be there. Clarissa Shields, who I was supposed to go both days. I could not go today for other reasons. But yeah, the PFL had representation there. The WWE's EVP, one of their head people of technology was up to do a panel as well. That was today, so I did not get to attend that one. But a lot of interesting names. Perkins Miller, who was someone that was very involved in the launch of the WWE Network. He has since gone elsewhere. So interesting names that were appearing at this. And I mean, people like Carmelo Anthony were up here, like the mayor of Toronto was at this thing. Like it sounds like this has grown into like one of the bigger tech conferences in the world. And it was like, I was blown away by how many people. It was at the CNE grounds at the Enercare Center, formerly a million other names. There were so many people at this. It was wild. Wow.
Yeah, with the roster and the names, I mean, I can imagine. And of course, you had a chance to catch Tony Khan's press conference. Or sorry, his presentation, I should say.
Yeah.
Of which we read some notes from. And you also had a brief chance to talk to him. How was that?
Yeah, it was. I went there not with anything scheduled, but was able to work some magic and get a couple of minutes with Tony Khan. As you heard the interview, it was quick. But I tried to make the most of the time we had. But very, very positive getting to chat with him. And yeah. Afterwards, talked a bit about, you know, the idea of like running Toronto and the size of like venue. I shared like what we have talked about on the show, that I believe for a pay-per-view, that they would not necessarily sell out the Rogers Center, but I think they would do very healthy because of all the different places that you would draw from. I would not be as bullish on this for maybe a middle of the week Dynamite, but for a pay-per-view of the traffic you would get from Montreal, that I think you'd get a steady stream of people coming up or coming over from Detroit, from Buffalo, like that Northeast pocket. Like, what do you think? Do you think like that's too ambitious for an AEW pay-per-view? Do you think that they should do something more conservative than that, or first time in the market for a pay-per-view? Like, do you see it having the ability to do 25,000 or so?
I it's a very tough question to ask. I mean, do you want to run a 60,000 seater with a 25,000 capacity? You know, how's that going to look? If you can't even get 20,000, you know,
I think they could do 25 to 30. I really do, for a pay-per-view.
Yeah, perhaps.
And that is an argument of like, do you want to run a venue that you can't guarantee you fill, and how, like the Sky Dome, the Rogers Center, like it's a very cavernous stadium. Like, it is very big.
At the end of it all, if you're running your first show in a major market, you want to, you know, talk of a sellout. It might be better for our optics to, you know, have a ticket sellout immediately versus, you know, hey, we have a lot of tickets remaining if you want to come and check out.
But Scotiabank is like 12 for wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's way under. Like, you'd be leaving a lot of people without the chance to come. And I think it would actually, you know, it would prohibit people that would maybe make a trip out of this. So, like, I would try it. I would honestly, for your first pay-per-view in the market, I think it would be really big. And,
If there's any market to attempt it in, I feel like Toronto is as good as any. You know, there's a lot of pent-up demand for it.
Huge.
We'll see.
Would Kate from Montreal come for a pay-per-view? I think she would.
I wonder. Toronto. I'm not sure.
I think so.
I think a lot of people would come over, not just, you know, in Canada.
Would Bruce come from Vancouver? That would be the question. That's a trek. That's a trek from Vancouver.
I think everybody we know will make their way over for this.
Brain would probably have to work that night, so I don't know.
Maybe.
We'd find out. All right. That interview is up on the Post Daily News Show, if you want to check that out. I did think it was, you know, maybe expected by some, but I was just curious to find out that he will, in fact, be the one spearheading the U.S. media rights negotiations. Like, this is the biggest set of negotiations in the company's history. And if they come out with a sizable increase, it's industry changing. So I think that's very important when you look at the WWE's last set. It was not them doing it in-house. They were enlisting Nick Khan at the time when he was not part of WWE. So this time they have Nick Khan in-house, and that's a great savings from them, that they don't have to set aside a percentage for an agency to be negotiating on their behalf. And conversely, AEW, if it's Tony Khan, but that is going to be a very, very very important set of negotiations.
Well, Tony Khan is the one with the connections to Warner. You know, he was probably the one who negotiated the deal in the first place to get AEW a part of, TNT.
Different people in place, though, when that deal was struck, when Kevin Riley was there, others. But, I mean, you obviously now you do have the relationship being part of the Warner Brothers Discovery.
And as the data man, as the person who, you know, books the show, I don't know if there's a better person to negotiate than him. So it makes sense that he would lead all that.
One other story that we were going to talk about, and we'll probably talk about more on Thursday, especially if more details come out. But earlier today, I reported that Paul Levesque was in Orlando and spoke at the Performance Center. And I spoke to multiple people who confirmed he was there. And the message that he gave was that he's back. How much this, like if this, I don't know what the extent of being back is going to mean for Paul Levesque. But one person noted to me that he said he was looking forward to working with all these new people that he hasn't had a chance to work with, and then alluded to something exciting coming up, which is why he was actually there today, but can't say what that is. So, I mean, this could be to the extent of him going back and resuming the prior duties before the cardiac event 9 months ago. Maybe it's, you know, doling out more of those duties, but still taking a more pronounced role. Like, he has been removed from the NXT picture since the health scare last year. And it sounds like he is going to be much more in the mix. And I think that that's really important news that he's kind of back in a kind of leadership position here, beyond just all the NIL and kind of talent recruitment roles that he has been holding.
Interesting how, you know, a month ago we had Stephanie announce that she was leaving to spend more time with her family. And now all of a sudden, both her and Hunter are back in the system, back at work. Of course, you know, with Triple H, we wonder to what capacity he'll be involved, because there is the health concern. Any sort of stress in a work situation is especially, you know, concerning for somebody in his position. So I hope,
maybe it does not have to be the extent of what his prior, you know, day to day was with NXT 1.0. I mean, maybe this can be something where he is still taking an active role and he is overseeing it, but there is a team there that you can delegate a bit better. It's a question that I don't have the answer to yet, but I think it's notable. And then whatever he was stating, like, he was down there to meet about, like, something in the pipeline.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get a bit more information as the days progress and whatever this big announcement of a new thing is.
All right. So we will be getting into the show, but I do want to remind people that the latest edition of Ask Away is up for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. 80 minutes of Way and I discussing everything from dad movies to money orders, Beavis and Butthead, and wrestling stuff in there too.
A little bit of wrestling in there as well. Yeah. Also, we've already got the latest edition of Up Next. Shot in the Dark is also up on the Up Next feed, so go check that out. And then tomorrow, not only do we have MCU Later coming out with me and WH, and our good friend Ahmad from New Jersey talking about Ms. Marvel, based in New Jersey. Oh yeah, we brought out the OGs here for Ask Away. That is happening on the Post Wrestling Cafe feed, but then on the British Wrestling Experience feed, we have a very special edition of Bushby and Thompson's Wrestling Adventure.
Their final adventure, their last ride. Martin and Andrew getting together on Thursday as Martin is giving his he is winding down his duties. So it is one final adventure for the two of them, and they will be presenting a very special show on Thursday. So you'll want to catch that out. And I know that Andrew was very busy today because he was also doing an interview. I will not state yet with whom, but you can look out for that probably in the near future as well. Man is always busy.
Everybody's busy here at Post Wrestling.
Yes. Especially you this week, Way. You've really, you've just been.
You as well.
I've been sick. I've been, I've been trying to balance.
Busy while
things.
Being sick as well. So the world is busy. You know, let's be honest. Who's not busy these days?
What is the busiest 10 minutes of your entire week?
The busiest 10 minutes. It probably is somewhere in Wednesday night. Maybe as the show is wrapping up and I'm finishing typing my notes and trying to get this set up. So,
it's definitely the busiest 10 minutes of my week are like 9:50 to 10:05. Okay.
Yeah.
Tonight, a friend of mine started texting me during the busiest 10 minutes of my entire week. It was like a group text, and I was, I don't expect this person to know. I don't think they follow wrestling at all, but it's just texting me about like,
I think I was in this group text.
Way might have been in this group text or not, but I was just, I could not respond because it was, my head was spinning. Dude, when I'm in my happiest, when we go live, I've got Cino's report up. It's tweeted out. It's on Facebook. I've got my notes done. If I have time to warm up a coffee, that's a great night. On a Dynamite, that is a huge win. And tonight I maximized those 5 minutes between Dynamite ending and starting.
If I could fill my water bottle and pee before the show, then I'm happy.
I go to the bathroom during the picture-in-picture. You got to space that out. You can't leave that for the 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm close to just installing a porta potty here in this office.
I thought you were going to say catheter, which
that would be even better. Yes.
Can't be taking bathroom breaks during AEW. Just, yeah. You know, just go. All right, let's get into Dynamite tonight. The go-home show for Forbidden Door this Sunday. And at the end, we will go over the updated card because there were a lot of additions and updates on Wednesday's card. From the UW Milwaukee, what is this? The University of Wisconsin Milwaukee Panther Arena in Milwaukee.
Okay.
A mouthful, yes.
Sure.
Bryan Danielson comes out to start the show with Tony Schiavone in the ring. And dude, Schiavone is just so excited about the week ahead. We've got Forbidden Door, Blood and Guts next week. And Danielson notes, it's a great week to be an AEW fan and a professional wrestling fan. He plugs Forbidden Door that will feature the two best professional wrestling companies in the world, which are just, I mean, just taking a bow and arrow to Twitter. I mean, just, can you imagine the fallout?
He did say professional wrestling. Did not say sports entertainment.
I will tell you, just tweeting out notes from that Tony Khan panel on mm-hmm. Wednesday, the responses you get, it's like, dude, it's insane. It's just like crazy people.
You're dropping blood into the water. Yeah.
It's like the anger at like I tweeted out like the expected attendance for I'm like, these are numbers. It's yeah. like, my God, it's crazy. But nonetheless, he was expecting to be part of both Forbidden Door and Blood and Guts. And brings up Zack Sabre Jr.'s challenge to prove who was the better technical wrestler. And Bryan Danielson was excited for this, and he was excited to crush the man's trachea. He had this all mapped out. He was going to stomp his trachea. But unfortunately, due to anarchy in the arena, he is not cleared to compete at Forbidden Door or Blood and Guts, and then got all fired up about the fact that he can still read 500 words a minute and run 2 miles without breaking a sweat. So he's going to be just fine, okay? He can still speed read. He's all set to go.
500 words a minute. Wow, that feels like a lot.
That's a lot. That's a yeah. lot. That's like that was like an essay for me in like grade 10. He goes over all the injuries he's come back from in the past, so don't worry about him. Eddie Kingston called me a judgmental prick. Damn right I am. I have high standards, and I've found the one person I trust to take my spot at Forbidden Door and Blood and Guts, who can take it to Zach at a technical level and then come back and kick Chris Jericho's ass. You will be astounded by what he'll do in AEW. But I came out of the bad guy ramp, and I'm not going to tell you, and I'm not going to tell Zack Sabre Jr. either. And this crowd was so deflated. So tune in on Sunday, and he promises the greatest technical wrestling match of their lives when they tune in on Sunday. And then Zack Sabre Jr. walks out, and we cut to the back. We never heard from him. He just walked out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that part didn't really surprise me a whole lot, John. You know, like, we all love Zack Sabre Jr.'s promos, of course. Maybe a little bit of disappointment.
I was already to, like, even sick, I would have done it for tonight. I would have
done it. You were already typing in dickhead in your notes before you had to delete them. Yeah, I'm sure. But I mean, I got this. Listen, John, they had a lot to cram into the show, a lot of things that they had to announce. And at this point, if you don't know who Zack Sabre Jr. is, you're not going to care anyway. But if you know, all you really needed to do was to see him out in person. We had a little bit of a face-to-face for Brian, and this was essentially a segment that told you, you're not getting it this Sunday, but eventually down the line, we are going to get that man.
I think that was the takeaway here is that, you know, they know that they mm-hmm. people want this match, and you will get this match at a time to be determined. I will say this though, like you were tuning in and yes, there had been the reports that like he's not going to be cleared. But I think a lot of people were tuning in and they didn't know for sure what the status was going to be. So it is going to be a letdown of an announcement that Danielson has to give you. And then I think at the end, I think you want to give your fans something. And it was almost like a double shot of tune in on Sunday to find out who it is. And mm-hmm. there are times to do the surprise. And I think there's sometimes that you throw a bone to your fan base. And I just thought with both of these, it was just like a double whammy that your audience took. Like, we're not getting Danielson, and you're not even going to tip your hand as to what we're getting on Sunday. And I just felt this was one where maybe we did the surprise for Sunday.
Agreed. I agree. Yeah, especially I think it's one thing if it's a TV show, you want to tease a, you know, who's going to show up next week. But I think for a pay-per-view, especially if it's a big name, and it better be a big name.
It has to. This cannot be something where it's just no offense to the guy, but like John Hennigan, you know what I mean? But yeah, this has to be huge. And, you know, actually the three that I saw most prominently, Cesaro, Johnny Gargano, and Zack Sabre Sr.
Zack Sabre Sr.
Yeah, that was a joke one. But I laughed at that response I got. But yeah, okay. the two were like Cesaro and Gargano that I saw the most from people responding.
And I mean, of the two, I suppose either would fit into, you know, great technical wrestler. But I think in terms of star power, I get the sense a lot of people are wanting to see Cesaro in AEW finally. Him coming in as a part of the Black Bull Combat Club, I think, makes a whole lot of sense. It's a match that would be worthy of, I think, elevating Forbidden Door to, you know, that, wow, what a great show, what a great surprise type of status. So to me, he feels like a front runner for who it is. And if that's the level of expectation, if they deliver, you know, below that, people are going to be disappointed. So they have to, I assume, know what they're doing. But this is Tony Khan. He has under delivered on big promises before, at least according to the audience. So we shall see.
Regal did say that he's got Johnny Saint's number on speed dial.
Wow. Hey, that would be quite the match, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, this is unfortunately just, you know, a rough string of injuries that are going around, not just in AEW, but in professional wrestling. But this timing of this injury in the midst of this show, with a number of their top stars out, in Kenny and, you know, Punk and Brian, and I mean, Jeff Hardy, if you, you know, want to classify.
It's a star that's unavailable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a major hit. You know, this would have been a match that I think would have really bolstered the card on paper in terms of, like, you know, how many dream matches are they fulfilling with this brand versus brand concept? So they don't have it, but, you know, they can make good with a big surprise on Sunday.
John Moxley promo in the back.
But by the way, you know, Brian did not mention what sort of injury this was. Now, him mentioning that he could still read 500 words a minute, in addition to being able to run really fast, I suppose tells you it could be some sort of combination of a head injury or, I don't know, body injury. But I feel like the big news would be if he did suffer any sort of head injury, you know? Since his return, we have not necessarily had that case to deal with in professional wrestling. What is the proper protocol for somebody with this history, and what does it mean for long-term effects for him?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the speculation that you have coming out of this, and I think you treat it like anyone with a concussion.
But different with Brian.
Is different. He has also come back, and it's been over 4 years of him coming back, and it's not like we're I don't think we even have a case of him having a concussion in that time span.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But does the brain necessarily just heal that way? You know, ultimately he does have a more riskier case than other people. So is it different? You treat a Brian differently if he has suffered a concussion versus somebody else?
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that question. And I don't know if I can even answer if he's necessarily at further risk. Like, yes, he has the history of it. But it's not like this guy has been, you know, working like a conservative style, especially in this AEW run. And thus far, like up until now, like he has not had an issue. And again, we are, you know, speculating here about what it is. But I think given his description here, that's where a lot of people are going to jump to conclusions. Hmm. Moxie did his promo about Eddie Kingston taking a fireball and putting his partner on the shelf. We found out in Vegas that the Jericho Appreciation Society can fight. Next week, we'll find out if they can survive. And he goes through the history with Eddie Kingston, Santana Ortiz, and Wheeler Yuta surviving. And Moxley's been around the block himself. I hate you, Chris Jericho. He's driven by money, fame, and ego. And this Sunday might be the biggest match of his life. And Tanahashi may be the greatest wrestler that's ever lived. And he is going to transform into what he's always believed he could be. It's personal on Sunday. And once the bell rings, I have no respect for anyone. So he had the unenviable task of having to push two big matches over this next week. And we'll see next week. Like, they've, you know, built up this blood and guts, but it is also, you know, it was secondary tonight to Forbidden Door.
Yeah, the timing of blood and guts, I think, to me, has proven to be pretty awkward with this Forbidden Door pay-per-view just kind of wedged in between there. And it's, in my opinion, negatively affected both builds. Where, man, there are just some of these segments where I think you're trying to build so much at one time that, you know, ultimately everything suffers a little, but, you know, it helps that you have somebody on the level of talent and ability of a John Moxley who can really kind of talk you into anything. And he was, I think, as tremendous as always, delivering this sort of fiery promo. Again, not an ideal situation to be put into there. This was supposed to be CM Punk's role. So he has to come in here, focus on two different programs at once. I thought he did really well.
So last year, it was like 5-on-5 for Blood and Guts, and Moxley listed like Kingston, Santana, Ortiz, and Yuta, but we also have this replacement. So would that be,
right.
Would that mean 6-on-6?
That's a very good point. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, you do have the numbers with the Jericho crew. So, I mean, you can do the added person. Orange Cassidy, Trent Beretta, and Rocky Romero against Will Ospreay and Aussie Open. They mention how Juice Robinson has refused to give up the physical U.S. title, and therefore Ospreay just coming out with the British heavyweight title. The babyfaces all get dropped on the aprons as we go through the break. Advantage on Trent. Cassidy gets the tag. He delivers the kicks to Aussie Open, and then a double Rana and locks on a Greco-Roman knuckle lock to Fletcher, scales to the top and comes off with a head scissors to Mark Davis, and then challenges Ospreay to enter the ring. We get triple dives onto Ospreay and Aussie Open, and a Stun Dog Millionaire is delivered by Cassidy to Ospreay. The crowd all chanting, holy shit. We get Aussie Open double teaming Romero. The Strong Zero is stopped by Ospreay with a super kick into a Code Red and a pile driver follow-up by Davis. Then Ospreay goes for the space-flying Tiger Drop, missing Cassidy, who leans against the apron, and Romero delivers a high cross. Cassidy gets the tag, Orange Punch, and pins Kyle Fletcher in 11 minutes and 37 seconds. I thought Cassidy was tremendous in this match, and I know it's maybe like a curveball for people, but I think this Ospreay-Cassidy match is going to be outstanding on Sunday.
There's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, you could pair Will Ospreay with like 90% of this AEW roster, and I think the results will be fantastic. You know, the guy has been having great matches since the kidney infection alone, you know, so I don't doubt the results will be great. Orange Cassidy is a very capable worker. This match was really a bit of a reintroduction to him and his shtick. We haven't seen it in a while. I think the audience still enjoys it. The interaction that they had was fantastic. Got a holy shit chant. And also, of course, served as a bit of a preview of, I guess, what Roppongi Vice had to offer. I suppose the reason why Great O'Connor and Jeff Cobb weren't in this instead of Aussie Open were because they needed Aussie Open to take the pinfall.
Yeah. But we did get O'Connor and Cobb out there afterwards. But if you blinked, you would have missed it, that they were there. And then FTR ran down as well. So not like a super big build for the three-way tag. This is more focused on Cassidy and Ospreay. And I mean, some of these matches are going to fall by the wayside here on this go-home show to really hammer home. And I guess it was just the idea of Beretta and Romero get a focused spot in the six-man.
Yeah, I suppose so. You know, to be quite honest, I don't know how hot it feels, that tag team match, despite how much airtime they've devoted to it in comparison to some of the other matches. The idea that one team is going to leave with both the ROH and the IWGP Tag Team Championships does not feel as big as I think a stipulation like that should, nor does this, you know, U.S. title match between Orange Cassidy and Will Ospreay. I mean, for one thing, he doesn't have the belt. another thought, I mean, if Orange Cassidy wins this, do we get an orange juice match?
That's what I thought as you were just recapping that. I think that that's the only natural.
He's the front runner, right? Already there.
Yes. Yes. We'll see if we can concentrate on that coming out of the pay-per-view. I really like the six-man. There was maybe one little sequence where it just seemed like that the timing was a little off when they were all getting involved. But overall, I really enjoyed the six-man. I thought that especially Cassidy and Ospreay, Kyle Fletcher was great in this. Trent is just he's tremendously underrated. Just great at the moments of selling and just always being in the right place at the right time. So this was a nice opener, but it was one that you totally forget about by the time these 2 hours are up.
Yeah, yeah.
FTR then came out as O'Connor and Cobb were there too, and that ended the segment. Sanjay Dutt is with Jay Lethal and Satnam Singh. Dutt's ordered new pencils, and they're going to celebrate by going to India. But Jay Lethal wants to become the new ROH TV champion, but can't do that until Samoa Joe comes back to work. So he tells Joe, either tape up your shoulder and defend the title or vacate the championship, and it will go to the longest reigning ROH TV champion. I don't know if that's how belts being relinquished works. And we've had no shortage of vacated titles recently. God knows we don't need another one with a
Lethal could be the interim champion. I'm sure they want to make an interim ROH TV championship. Yeah. You know, this program too has been quite cold, I have to say. You know, and of course it doesn't help that Joe has been off, you know, presumably to do some outside projects, but
did this need to be on the show this week?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, unless, you know, Joe's return is imminent, but I would say even so, let the guy return, you know. Hardly on this week when you're trying to promote Blood and Guts and also trying to promote Forbidden Door. Do I need a reminder of Satnam Singh and Jay Lethal? Although he did have a match on Rampage, I suppose that's why, you know, to capitalize off of the freshness of that. But on a show with so many other talents and so many other names, Satnam Singh and whatever's going on with Jay Lethal is hardly in our minds. One note coming from, of course, the, you know, Tony Khan Collision. I keep wanting to say Collision Course. It's a Linkin Park album or something. Collision Conference from Tony Khan. He did mention, you know, some notes about Ring of Honor. Could that be imminent, John? You know, the next Ring of Honor pay-per-view? And is this a program that they built long enough that they might save for that?
Well, I think the pay-per-view announcement is coming. And the bigger question is the TV and something weekly, which, man, I think that's a lot. It's just a lot on everyone's plate. In particular, Tony Khan's.
What's the next pay-per-view? When would the next ROH pay-per-view be if we're fitting to, you know, a classic ROH schedule?
Oh, I see what you mean. I don't even know if they're necessarily going to be following that. I mean, they typically run one September. Like, that's when they do, what, the All-Star Extravaganza. But I don't even know if they're going to follow kind of the time. Like, the big ones would be Supercard and Final Battle. I think everything else is really movable. But you would be aiming to do something this summer. And Supercard did really, really well. So I think certainly you follow up with that. And maybe there is the argument, like, if you don't have an imminent streaming or TV deal for ROH, can it exist as a couple pay-per-views a year, like four pay-per-views per year? And would there be an audience for it? Supercard proved that there would be. And I would imagine that with the benefit of AEW promotion on television, if you can push it that way, I think, like, that could work.
Supercard had the added element of just, like, intrigue, you know, with it being Tony's first show technically, and us not exactly knowing, you know, who was going to leave with the championships. I think they could certainly do a good job of, like, you know, promoting a successful Ring of Honor show, but I also feel like a lot of it might be based around people that they don't have available at the moment. You know, names like Bryan Danielson and CM Punk, who I think mean a whole lot to the ROH brand, not being available, would that dampen things? If Claudio shows up, maybe he's a guy, you know, that you would look towards. Certainly Joe, of course.
The other question is, like, Ring of Honor being a Tony Khan purchased promotion as opposed to AEW owning it is, mm-hmm. like, if you're TBS or TNT, like, if there is no TV deal in place and you're using this programming to promote this pay-per-view, like, how does that all work?
Certainly. Absolutely. These are all really interesting questions that I'm sure, you know, are on the plate of a Tony Khan, the negotiator.
The next segment, out comes heel Christian Cage and the heels that he was wearing, these, this matching jacket and boot combo with his black Steve Jobs turtleneck. This was the greatest outfit for a heel in
years.
This
was a great look.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. He came out, you knew this guy was a piece of shit.
Oh, fuck. No good person wears the turtleneck. Are you kidding me? Turtlenecks are definitely heel looks. Crowd boos immediately. I thought he looked great.
Yeah, tons of boos for him. And as expected, Christian brings up Double or Nothing from last year, where Jungle Boy eliminated him from the Casino Battle Royale. And the reaction from the fans when that happened, They cheered Jungle Boy, and it affected him fast-tracking his way for the title. So Christian's whole character now is cashing in all this money by doing the least amount of work. He is Kevin Nash. That's the character.
Which is complete counter to his catchphrase, outwork everyone.
Where he has now released a new shirt that reads, worked everyone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if exactly he worked everybody. I mean, we all pretty much saw this coming, but still a great shirt. I love the idea.
So he checked social media for some background on Jungle Boy. And the way he described it is like, this was his first time delving into social media and discovered what a cesspool this place is of you fans that know nothing about this business. I'm one of the best. I've got it all figured out. I don't tell you how to do your job. And he threatened Shivani if he interrupts.
I don't tell someone. You how you do your job at the drive-thru.
At the drive-thru. And Jungle Boy cost him a lot of money. So what did he do? I rode his coattails. I cashed a paycheck doing the minimal amount of work. You think I came here to help younger talent? That's bullshit. I came back to make a ton of money. And he challenges anyone to have a match that people talk about beyond 1 week, much less have matches that children are seated down to watch, that changes history and pay-per-views are named after. Then, when you do that, you can be on my pay scale.
So this was a shot at MJF.
Yes, this was very much around MJF, who of complaining about how much other people are making. So this was our first promo where it was distinctly alluding to the MJF story.
Hmm.
Jungle Boy has the talent, but he doesn't have the killer instinct. And one time that I didn't give you advice or walk you down to the ring, you lost the tag titles. Now he has to get his hands dirty. And that really pisses me off. Now Christian's got to work. So they show the clip of that did not get shown on television last week, where Jungle Boy's mother and sister are in the front row, and Christian goes up to both of them, telling them, you raised a piece of shit. And Christian explains that I was giving Jungle Boy's mother the chance to apologize for giving birth to Jungle Boy. And he thinks that she wanted him to be Jungle Boy's father figure. I never wanted to be Jungle Boy's father. You have a father, but your father's dead. And this crowd just reacts in the spirit of Luke Perry at this tasteless line, and said that's probably a good thing because he'd be embarrassed and ashamed at what you've become. So enjoy your early retirement at 25. And with that, out comes Luchasaurus, who grabs Christian by the throat, and Christian is choking and gagging and says they need to talk in private, and then says, remember what happened to Marco. And Luchasaurus loosens the grip. Christian says, you are like a son to me. And he needs to talk in private. A son, his 65-million-year-old son. And he hugs Luchasaurus, and Luchasaurus spares Christian Cage. Dude, Christian was awesome. He was the star of this show for me.
If we're going to compare and contrast heel turns, Christian has lapped Edge already several times over with this one segment alone. He was fantastic. I feel like, you know, a lot of us recognize that he does some of his best work, maybe his very best work as a heel. And finally, while in AEW, they certainly took their time with it, but they finally have an opportunity for him to become what feels like it could be, honestly, like near the top, you know, as an act here, at least with his level of speaking. This was a tremendous first week for him. The you know, the lines were good. I don't know how I feel about like the Luke Perry stuff. Obviously, like, you know, anytime you have somebody, I'm sure like he cleared it with everybody. It's just like I just don't think it's just a little cheap. Like, especially for somebody who, you know, is as creative as Christian. But listen, it worked. Got a big reaction. It's what people are going to come out of this segment remembering the most. And beyond that, I mean, it seems like we had or are getting a Jurassic Express breakup in totality here between Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus as well. So I really need to know what happened to Marco to get Luchasaurus to, you know, just forgive Christian like this.
He got cut. I mean, his contract wasn't renewed.
But why would that suddenly, you know, get Luchasaurus to?
Well, maybe he believes Christian can pull the strings. Like maybe when Luchasaurus is contract, maybe Cage has a lot of power here in this company.
I'm expecting a bit more, hopefully an explanation with a bit more depth, like something secretive happened to Marco Stunt.
Maybe there was a contract renewal and Christian intercepted it for Marco, and then his contract lapsed. They assumed he wasn't resigning. Yeah.
And then that somehow is supposed to make Luchasaurus like want to join Christian.
Well, I think the intent of this segment was to give you the impression you don't know Marco Stunt has disappeared, and yeah. I make you extinct, dinosaur. That's it. So anyway,
yeah, perhaps.
Do you see Luchasaurus as just like the muscle here for Christian?
I think so. I mean,
because if you do that, you almost have to do a whole rebranding of Luchasaurus at this point. Like, it kind of doesn't fit the character to be in this guy's corner as the dinosaur.
Well, the gimmick is good. It'd be interesting. Can a dinosaur be a heel in this company? But I will say I love the team. I like the faction a whole lot. But I also feel like they need to start taking Jungle Boy a bit more seriously as a singles threat. And this will be, I mean, this is all geared towards that point, isn't it? You know, to get Christian a hot enough person to be able to have a hot opponent for Jungle Boy. And Luchasaurus as well. You know, like, I feel like he's kind of run his course as, you know, guy who doesn't say a whole lot and just roars occasionally. He needs a bigger role, you know, something to sink his teeth into, his big dinosaur teeth into. You know, to whether as a heel muscle or just as, you know, just a single star in some capacity. And this would be it.
Yes. And the conclusion of this segment is that the legacy of TLC much greater than that of Judgment Day.
I would say so. Sure. Yeah.
We go to the back. The Young Bucks are with Kyle O'Reilly. And all is right with the world. They are now two-time champions and state as a safe bet will be part of Forbidden Door. But Kyle O'Reilly notes he's not medically cleared and says that Sting should be locked up and is threatening to sue Sting. And it's going to be the Young Bucks teaming with Hikuleo and El Fantasmo against Sting and his cronies, who we would learn from later. And quite the cronies that Sting has lined up.
Yeah. The billing of this in the end, and we can jump to it right now, is what I found most interesting. First of all, they had the Young Bucks with Hikuleo and El Fantasmo credited as, or at least billed as, the Bullet Club.
Yes.
So at least some official recognition that the Young Bucks are still somewhat a part of Bullet Club. So how's that all going to work, you know, with everybody else that's currently in the stable? Also, Sting's faction, known as the Dudes with Attitudes.
Yes.
Love it.
Shawn Michaels and Diesel, I guess, were maybe contacted for Forbidden Door. They could not cross. The Dudes with Attitudes.
Yeah.
Does that beat Sting's cronies?
To me, it does, of course.
Malakai Black against Penta Oscuro for the All-Atlantic qualifier. Who would be the final man joining Tomohiro Ishii, who qualified earlier this week, beating Clark Connors? So they go through the break here. Penta reversed off the middle rope into a sling blade. They fight on the edge. Black avoids the fear factor, and Penta is selling his back and goes to the floor and Black hits a moonsault off the corner, and it's followed with a double stomp by Black. Penta then hits the fear factor off the middle turnbuckle, but his back is so hurt he can't reach Black, who rolls to the rope. And when Penta finally makes his way over, Black gets his foot on the rope, goes for the pump handle. His back gives out and leaves him prone for the Black Mass. And Malakai Black wins the match in 9 minutes and 56 seconds. Nice match. I wouldn't say it went above that.
Nice match is exactly what I wrote down as well. So I don't know what it is about this one that, like, just, you know, brings up nice. But on paper, I think maybe I was expecting a little bit more from this. And I have to preface, you know, I'm watching this with the commercial break, and it's impossible to pay attention for me during the picture-in-picture. So that definitely took a good chunk out of it. Coming back from break, the crowd was as hot as ever. So I imagine they had a much different viewing than I.
Do you blame the lack of sound for your attention during the picture-in-picture, or the ads that we get during the
picture-in-picture? I mean, it's both. It's the lack of sound, it's the tiny screen, and the fact that I've got somebody trying to sell me a cheeseburger, like, you know, or Shaq selling me printer ink from Epson, that type of stuff. It's impossible. Plus,
Dan O'Toole showing up on TSN in the picture-in-picture. Yeah.
Plus, so, I just need a mental break, you know, from this show, and I try to take advantage during the picture-in-picture.
Pac comes out, and he has words with Malachi Black, but then we go on screen for the main event. It's Miro. All he wanted was his god, his gold, and his gorgeous wife. He will walk through Forbidden Door, dragging all the bastards and pagans, and he will redeem them all. And this Sunday, he will send them to meet their maker. And when you do, tell the coward the Redeemer wants to talk, and then he spits in disgust. So he is going to kill these three, and they're going to be sent to the afterlife to give a message to God. So he has this all mapped out. This is the ultimate Forbidden Door.
That
few cross, yes.
That would be quite the stipulation. Yeah, I like the fact that Wardlow had this promo ready and good to go. You know, like right after.
I mean, he might have just pre-taped it.
He talked about the pagan. It's not Tomohiro Ishii, you know. So
is Penta a pagan?
I don't even really know what a pagan is, but I feel like it fits Malachi Black a little bit better. Okay. So I can only imagine.
Maybe he did multiple versions, and he did a version for
every person. Maybe he did one for Clark Connors and.
Tomoaki Hanma.
Yeah.
So then we hear from Wardlow. He always gets what he wants, and all he wants is the TNT title, really setting his sights high. And he's been waiting 3 years for this opportunity. He doesn't take orders anymore, and he will welcome Scorpio Sky into Wardlow's world when he's healthy. Each time he said this, I think of Bobby's world.
What? Why?
When I think of Wardlow's world, it just brings me back to Howie Mandel and Bobby's world.
Yeah, Wardlow's world does not sound cool at all. Come on.
I mean, just picture him on one of those, that little trike that Bobby used to ride around, the little two-wheeler.
Anyway. It's a three-wheeler. A trike would be. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Anyway, so that's what I thought of here. We'll see if Wardlow's world makes it.
Yeah, I don't think that sounds cool at all.
Yeah, it's like maybe I go.
You don't think of Wayne's World?
No, surprisingly, I've gone to Bobby's World both times. I've heard this line. Like it sounds like, hey guys, I'm having my 8th birthday party. Where we're going to Wardlow's World? You're going to Wardlow's World? Aren't you a little old for that? My little sister went there.
Yeah. Can you come up with something with the letter W? That sounds a bit. I don't know, more adult. Wardlow's warehouse.
That's where I go to get like you know, as DVD set or something. It's like everything must go. Show up at Wardlow's warehouse Saturday morning. First come, first serve.
Oh man.
But wait, if you call in the next 20 minutes. Hangman Page versus Wisconsin's own Silas Young. Adam Cole is out for commentary, and they brought up their history, wrestling in Ring of Honor. Their last match took place May 11th, 2018, at the prestigious Ted Reeve Arena.
Oh, yeah. A classic. Any match that's there is a classic.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
If you can headline at the Ted Reeve Arena, you can headline anywhere. Young gets tossed out to the floor. Page misses a pescado, but then rebounds and swings around the rope with a clothesline, Orihara moonsault, and then Page with a superplex, pescado, top rope clothesline. But the crowd, they're all game behind Silas. They're pulling for their hometown guy. And Young delivers his rolling fireman's carry, loses his footing, but completes the plunge with the split-legged moonsault, missing Page, and he is hit with the buckshot. Hangman gets the win over Silas Young.
I thought this was a good match. You know, surprisingly, I engaged with this one a bit more than even Penta versus Malachi Black there. And I thought it was a great performance from Silas Young, you know. Odd choice for an opponent, but I mean, I suppose Wisconsin does make sense. But to get a spot like this even, I feel like Tony Khan has to see something in him. And I thought he took full advantage. He killed it here. Perhaps a name that he's considering for this ROH reboot.
Possibly. Someone you associate totally with ROH. Mm-hmm. Adam Cole gets up to talk. Jay White interrupts, and he explains that he's responsible for making Forbidden Door as big as it can be, and that his opponent still cannot be Adam Cole because you lost to Page twice. White then enters the ring and says, "My opponent on Sunday will not be you either," to Paige. So they fight. Cole gets knocked off the apron. The Buckshot gets stopped when Adam Cole low blows Paige. And then Cole picks up the IWGP title and he's behind White, who turns around and catches Cole, who's about to use the belt. White then lifts Paige when all of a sudden you hear the entrance of the Rainmaker himself. Kazuchika Okada comes out, and dude, this place lost their mind as Okada came out. Huge in Milwaukee. And he runs down. Okada and Paige fight White and Cole. And then Okada and Paige have a face-off with one another. White ducks a Rainmaker before he exits. And this, to me, is the kind of moment you wanted to have many times with some of these New Japan performers coming over. Like, Okada just felt like your top, top-level star. And at the end of this all, it will, in fact, be a four-way match for the IWGP title on Sunday.
Did they announce that at the end of the segment?
Not at the end of the segment, during the rundown of the pay-per-view later that night.
Yeah. It was cool. It was, I mean, huge reaction to Kazuchika Okada, as I think many of us would expect, honestly. Like, if Will Ospreay gets that sort of reaction, if Minoru Suzuki gets that sort of reaction, I mean, how could Kazuchika Okada not? Do these New Japan guys not have anything but like white t-shirts though, packed in their suitcases? Come on. What are we doing here? This is like, you know, a big debut. Like we don't have something better for the Rainmaker to wear.
What did you want him to come out with?
Well, if not a robe, at least, come on, some sort of collar.
Turtleneck?
Yeah, this guy is supposed to be the guy with the, you know, the dollars flowing through the air. This, to me, felt like, I'm just imagining this to be a lot of people's first glimpse of Kazuchika Okada. You know, as much as as big of a deal he might seem to our audience, a lot of people watching on TNT, or sorry, TBS, may have never seen this guy before. And it's just, I don't know, white t-shirt doesn't really do a whole lot for me, especially when you have Jay White wearing a white t-shirt as well. But I also felt like they should have hammered things a little bit home, a little bit harder after the segment. They should have told you exactly what the match was. And why, after all of this, Jay White saying that it's not going to be Cole and it's not going to be Paige, how did those two suddenly get into the match?
That was a big gap for me, in particular the Cole one, who it was explained kind of logically, like, you've lost twice to Paige. What gets you into it? Like, they didn't even use the Owen tournament win to kind of justify him being there. And it missed that explanation that you're bringing up, because, yeah, it's like, why all of a sudden
you spend all this time discrediting these two for why they don't deserve a championship match. And all of a sudden we end the segment really thinking that it's going to be Jay White versus Kazuchika Okada. And then it, of course, requires Excalibur, you know, in his monumental rundown later on in the show to the
all-timer
official match. But no, absolutely, I think this build really should have been better with their clear explanations.
Yeah, I don't know what all went behind this match, but number one, I think you would have wanted to get this one out a little earlier, and maybe there were forces that prevented that. But at the end of it, I do think it needed that explanation for it, of after going through all this, even the part about Hangman explaining why he wasn't in the Battle Royal, that I'm not going to be getting a title match anytime soon, so I'm going to go for the IWGP title. So I do think you have to follow up a little on that. You're in theory shut out of the AEW title for an unknown reason. And you then, who's making this match for you to get you into this match?
Yeah. So, you know, we do have a four-way, and, you know, like it was maybe suggested at the beginning of all this, it's not as attractive a match as Hangman Page versus Kazuchika Okada. I think anytime you have, you know, a singles bout, it feels just that much more conclusive.
Okada's not the champion anymore, so that wouldn't have been the singles match.
I would have still rather have done it. To me, it felt bigger, but
does tell you neither are taking a pinfall in this four-way.
So, I mean, that is the reason why we're getting these multi-man matches, is it not? You know,
I think that's Adam Cole's role in this match. That's what you have to naturally expect.
And that's unfortunate, because I think at the start of this, we were looking for, and granted, there were curveballs thrown in. We were supposed to get Punk versus Tanahashi. We don't. But, you know, at the start of this whole Forbidden Door concept, I think there are a lot of eyeballs looking at Tony Khan and Gedo to have this feel different than your typical cross promotional tour, where you don't get by with these sort of shortcuts of having multi-man matches just so somebody can get a pinfall or take a pinfall. And in this case, it feels like a bit of a cop out, and it feels like it's, you know, a bit less than what they were promising ahead of time. And that was a title match between Paige and Okada. Nonetheless, I'm sure the match will be great.
I think so. But I think going in, I think this is one where it's, I think overall, like this pay-per-view, I think that there's going to be a lot of criticism of the buildup for it. But I also look at this card and I wonder if it's just going to be a card that delivers in such a way that it somewhat negates that. But you're selling people on the hype and the buildup.
The buy rate is what's most important. We know the quality of the show will be good. Dude, WWE shows leave us feeling good because the quality of those shows are good as well. Wrestling is just that good these days. But how much interest do you have going into it? And how many buys does this show garner?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
After that segment, we go to the baddies in the back, minus Red Velvet, who is injured. And Jade says that the show must go on, and they are now searching for a new baddie. So to apply, you can use the hashtag and tweet them why they should be part of the group and keep the photos PG, with Jade adding that you need to be a top-notch bitch, which eliminates me from the running, but Wei could still qualify.
I'm gonna try to get my selfie just right. Gonna get the right filters, pick the right outfit, and hashtag baddie search. I may enter. Yeah, Jade sounds great in these. You know, Stokely Hathaway obviously sounds very good, though. I feel like we've really yet to see his full integration into this entire thing, at least to the point where he feels like an integral part. And maybe that's just because like Jade herself has already become such a confident and comfortable promo. But yeah, unfortunate for Red Velvet. You know, this was a very good spot for her, but it makes way for another person to be added in. Do you have any thoughts on who it could be?
Oh, I no.
I saw a lot of buzz around, like people suggesting Sunny Kiss as a potential baddie, which would be interesting for sure. Trying to think who else, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, ideally it would be someone that's at least already on your roster that just doesn't have a role, rather than just someone completely off the roster that you're bringing in, just another body. Like this is a group that has some buzz to it and could help somebody. Athena and Chris Statlander mock the baddie search and note it's unfortunate that Red Velvet's hurt, but no one will get in their way trying to get to Jade. And they've got Willow Nightingale as Athena tells Jade to cut the shit.
I thought these two sounded good. You know, like It's got to be difficult trying to, you know, match the personality levels of like somebody like a Stokely Hathaway and a Jade Cargill. But I thought these two did really well, especially like Chris Statlander, who continues to make a lot of improvements in all areas, not just in ring, but in terms of her promo ability as well.
Marina Shafir versus Toni Storm. Shafir had Nyla Rose in her corner. Shafir executes a throw and then lands a kick to the chest so hard that Shafir knocks herself off balance. Storm gets tossed out, and this allows the ref to get distracted so Rose can hit a senton onto Storm. Through the break, it's all Shafir, and then Storm lands this running hip attack into the corner. Shafir's pump handle is countered into a roll-up, and Tony pins her in 7 minutes and 21 seconds. Afterward, Rose attacks Storm. Thunder Rosa runs down. They clear the ring after Tony picks up the loose women's belt and nails Nyla with it, and then hands it back to Thunder Rosa, who grabs her belt back and holds it up in front of Tony.
Mm-hmm. This is a match where I was surprised they gave Shafir a whole lot more than I was expecting. She was almost being portrayed as like a bit of a monster here.
She took everything almost up until like the comeback at the end.
Storm was like, you know, kind of getting by with a little bit of offense and barely squeaked by with a roll up win at the end. So they are pushing Shafir as if she is, you know, somebody at least to be feared very much in ring, despite of course taking several losses now, but they did pair her up with Nyla Rose in a tag team, which is interesting because we're getting the formation of several new women's tag teams here. Could that lead to, you know, a formation of a new championship, for instance, for the division.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
The all
we have so many managers. Why don't we have a managers championship?
The all, Indian Ocean.
What about the lakes? How many lakes are there that are underrepresented in pro wrestling?
I don't know if we have a Great Lakes championship.
They're going to be in Detroit next week. Maybe we will get something, you know. Who is the Lake Superior champion?
Scarborough Bluffs, inaugural intergender championship, John. I don't know. But listen, I'm glad that they're drawing these associations and building these little teams and mini factions. I like Shafir with Nyla Rose. I think her stuff looks very aggressive, very legit. Probably feels that way too, looking at some of these judo throws. They can't be like, these are not soft landing. So, credit to Toni Storm. Her matches don't have the smoothness of let's say a Will Ospreay type of match. But to me, they don't take me away from the immersion, because real fighting is not necessarily smooth. Judo is not smooth. It's very awkward in a real fight.
That's kind of how I describe Shafir. She's very awkward. And part of that is the inexperience. And it's also her foundation as well, that you're watching somebody that this is not a smooth process for her. And there's the limitations that come with that. These are not always the prettiest matches. But it's also there is a difference in her, that it's almost like she is doing something much different than any of the other wrestlers are.
But for what's not pretty, I think she gains in terms of realism. And of course, there's been all this talk about what happened between her and Thunder Rosa, which, by the way, they've buried the hatchet with a big piece of sourdough bread. So great. Good for them. But a lot of people were studying that match able to recognize that a lot of it was Shafir muscling herself and pulling off real suplexes and real throws on her own. But it's no surprise, because that's what you do in judo. You do not have cooperative opponents in real combat sports. She's used to non-cooperative opponents. And again, that awkwardness just kind of adds to some of the realism that I think she brings to her particular style of match.
Darby Allin and Sting, the dudes with attitude, don't believe that Kyle isn't medically cleared. They think he's just scared, but they're not coming alone on Sunday. They have two members of their own, and the other dudes that they have enlisted are Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi.
My favorite dude with attitude, Shingo Takagi. What a set of personalities that are going to be on this team.
Yeah, I don't need the match. I need the car ride of these four.
I need dinner. Show me what dinner looks like at In-N-Out or whatever they have in Chicago with these four.
Yeah. I think this match, this is the weirdest match of where you're going to have Sting with Hiromu, working with the Young Bucks. You've got El Fantasmo in here. Fantasmo and Darby working together, Darby with the Bucks. I think this will be awesome. And Sting's going to do something crazy in this whole thing as well. I don't doubt that this is going to be something totally different than anything else on the card. And it's kind of the weird kind of match that you want to have on a show like this, of these different worlds that are colliding.
I suppose so. I think there this match will get over just because of the personalities involved. They will go crazy for Sting. They'll go crazy for Darby. They'll go crazy for Shingo. They will go batshit for Hiromu Takahashi, who is a major superstar. But I do look at the pieces that they have, and I'm thinking, could Darby versus Hiromu not have been made for this, just to kind of give us that one big dream match scenario, with a big conclusive result? Or was this another case of neither person being able to afford a loss?
Yeah, I mean, I do get that. It's also, I think you do want to fit as many of your stars onto this. I think you do want to have the Young Bucks on this show.
But why not put the Young Bucks in a tag team match, in a proper tag team match, rather than what ultimately feels like a Corakuen Hall undercard match, with these multi-man matches?
Yeah, I would just say this for me, dude, you're going to get Nick Jackson and Hiromu together.
Yeah, I know. I don't doubt that the interactions will be great, but it just feels on paper to me, this feels more on the level of something you would get on the show, on the go-home show, rather than the pay-per-view.
For Rampage, the other go-home show this week, it's the DKC against Hook Andrade versus Phoenix, Serena Deeb and Mercedes Martinez in action, and Cash Wheeler against Jeff Cobb. So what did you think about this Rampage lineup coming off of Friday's number?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we discussed briefly on Post Daily News, not the worst number that they've had in the demo on Friday. I don't know.
And that's all Rampages, like not just in its normal time slot. Like this is this was below like 5:30 Eastern start times as well. So, I mean, it's very interesting to see that AEW is coming off two bad numbers with Dynamite last week and Rampage. And WWE is on this string of hot numbers from SmackDown, Raw, and it continued with NXT on Tuesday as well. And what that all means, and I think it's very important to see what this Dynamite number is that it does tonight. Was this a 1 week aberration where for whatever reason these AEW numbers are down? Is it indicative of something more? I think there was more concern after the Rampage number that we had two numbers back to back, and we'll see if this number bounces back or if it continues that trend.
Well, this week will be a test to see if it last week was, you know, something unrelated to star power for as a result for that rating. Because in terms of star power, I love Andrade versus Phoenix. I think it's a great looking match, but it's pretty low on, you know, as far as Rampages go. Hook is great, but he's going up against somebody in the DKC who no one watching AEW will have seen before. Deeb and Martinez are tag teaming. We don't know who their opponents are, not to mention, like, they're not stars themselves. Jeff Cobb is also somebody who means a whole lot maybe to people who keep up with professional wrestling like you and I, but means very little to your TNT viewer on a 10 p.m. slot. Same with Cash Wheeler. Again, as much as we love it, but they're very much, I think, booking the show as if it was another Rampage, you know, to get the interest of the diehard professional wrestling fan who doesn't miss any of these shows, rather than, I think, trying to attract a casual audience that they might have lost last week.
And Phoenix cut a promo just going back to the battle royal when Andrade hit him with a low blow and eliminated him. So that's the justification for the match on Friday, which, I mean, as a match, should be tremendous with Phoenix and Andrade. But yeah, this week's numbers are going to be very closely focused on. And then an update for Forbidden Door. The buy-in will see the Gun Club and Max Caster take on the DKC, Kevin Knight and Yuya Uemura. And then they ran down the whole pay-per-view card. So do you want to go through the pay-per-view card now or at the end of the show?
Let's do it at the end. Let's save it for the end.
Okay. So from there, we go to Chris Jericho.
We could talk about the Excalibur fucking... Was this an all-timer? Like,
given all the multi-mans and tags at Forbidden Door, and he had the blood and guts. And then at the end of it all, coming up next, it's our main event that he had to list that. This was probably, if not the highest, it's in that vicinity, because he had a ton of names to run down for this Forbidden Door show on Sunday.
And they're very self-aware of it now. I mean, again, like for a while now, I think these have just been like tests of endurance for and speed, I suppose, for Excalibur. And it's to the point now where, I mean, they're kind of joking about it afterwards. So they've become an attraction on their own, I would say.
I love them. It's part of the appeal to me of Dynamite every week is hearing this part where he just hammers it for you
and seeing how well you can keep up typing the notes.
Oh, it's amazing. Jericho and Lance Archer against Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi. William Regal was on commentary. Dude, he was awesome on this match. He put Tanahashi over as just so strong. He was fantastic on this. And then at the end, hard selling how important it is for Moxley to win this match. He was great.
Not just Regal. JR did a fantastic job putting Tanahashi over. You know, of course, we know he's got that New Japan experience for Access. And I do question like how much of the roster he feels that strongly about to the point where he could provide this sort of commentary with. But you know, he feels a very genuine way about Hiroshi Tanahashi when he says that Tanahashi is top 10 among wrestlers of his in his all time list, because he spoke about him as if he was, you know, one of the greatest. And that's worth a whole lot to somebody who might not be familiar with New Japan watching.
That's what you got to sell here. Yeah. To the person that maybe doesn't know Tanahashi, you get that endorsement from these two. It's it, very meaningful here. It's a big brawl at the beginning. Then they double team Moxley. Jericho's lion salt. He landed on the knees, and Tanahashi, he is stretching over the top rope to make the tag. He comes in. The crowd goes nuts for the air guitar. They're chanting his name. And then Jericho hits a code breaker. Moxley's in to make the save, dive onto Archer. And then Tanahashi ducks the Judas effect, and he went for his version of the code breaker. Like the one knee version. And then aces high on Jericho, who rolls through into the walls of Jericho, escapes that. Moxley and Archer are in. Moxley avoids the blackout. DDT to Archer, tags Tanahashi, high fly flow, and Archer takes the fall, as Jericho had less success teaming with this Lance than his other former partner with the same name.
Ooh.
12:03, and Moxley and Tanahashi are your winners. What did you think of the match before we get into all the post-match?
Very nice, very hot match. Absolutely. Yeah.
Tanahashi was so fun to watch in this match.
Totally. Yeah. Crowd was there for it all. Jericho was fantastic. You know, his match with Tanahashi was absolutely great from, I mean, several years, a long time ago, it feels like at this point, but they've retained their.
That we were there for.
Holy shit. You're right. Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
But they retain the same level of chemistry. Their styles, I think, really, they're both great wrestlers, so you compare most people with them, and I think the results would be great. But I think the two of them in particular, as like two enduring veterans who have just like somehow managed to just stay completely relevant and stay at the top at this whole time, they match really nicely. It was a lot faster of a match than I think I was expecting. And, you know, considering that it was Lance Archer and Jon Moxley on the other side, and it just tells you, like, all these guys are incredible. So really hot main event.
I thought this was the perfect kind of match to send you into the pay-per-view on Sunday. It's teasing you with like the bigger match of Moxie and Tanahashi. And this was one of the rare times I liked the opponents teaming together. Like it was never, they were never doing the dissension spots. It's like, we have a mission here to beat these guys. And it was only after the match ended that it was, the two are focused on one another, and they were very focused on one another in the ring as chaos ensued around them. So Regal is stressing how important it is for Moxley to win this match on Sunday. And they're in the middle, just staring at one another, trading words. When all of a sudden Eddie Kingston appears, attacking Jericho on the floor. Wheeler Yuta runs down. Kingston whips a chair at Sammy Guevara. Then Minoru Suzuki walks out. Yuta goes after him. Shota Umino is out. They're trying to explain, that's Moxley's protege. Popcorn is being thrown all over here. Suzuki's just having the time of his life. All this insanity is happening while Moxley and Tanahashi are locked. Neither is going to blink in the middle of this. And I thought it was such a cool visual that all this brawling is happening. They are fixated on one another in the ring. And that's how we ended the show. Just plugging the countdown for Friday night after Rampage. Blood and Guts next week. Moxley versus Tanahashi this Sunday. And then, plus, at Forbidden Door, we're going to see Chris Jericho teaming with... Didn't get the whole rundown here, but that was it. That was Dynamite.
Chaotic, you know, closing thing. I thought it was a cool visual too, you know, of Moxley staring in at Tanahashi and vice versa. I thought it was cool for maybe about like 30 seconds max. Not what
they went
felt
five.
Like,
it was like 5 minutes, dude. After like they ended at that, the match ended at 5-2, and they're pretty much on each other face to face for the whole final 5 minutes.
I think I just saw a tweet from somebody saying that they're still looking at each other right now in the middle of the ring. This was awkward. Okay, it got to the point where it was very clear that they were just filling time. I'm joking, John. I didn't see the tweet. But like it got to the point where they're just clearly filling time to go off air. And you even have like Moxley constantly checking for the time cue to see how long I have to look at this guy, you know, in the middle of the ring without doing anything. I was begging for one of them to start throwing an elbow or something just to kind of do something rather than like be there super awkwardly in this poorly timed TV segment. So I didn't have the same effect coming off of it. I thought it was super weird. But, you know,
I really didn't mind like the juxtaposition of these two guys who cannot take their focus off. And then there's all this brawling going on around them. But I mean, your reasoning is probably right of what the actual reasoning for this was rather than deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Forbidden Door.
Yes. So here's the card. Are you ready? As I get set for this.
Well,
so,
actually, let's get your thoughts. What do you think of this as a go home show?
I thought that there was a ton on this show. I think
there needed to be a ton on this show. right? They had so much to announce.
There was a lot to announce. That would have been my focus. I think that there was stuff that maybe we did not need Wardlow's world. And I mean, it's small things, but they add up when you've got a 30 or 60 second promo with Jay Lethal here and a 60 second with Wardlow here. And you're promoting all of this. I'm not super concerned that Blood and Guts is next week. I think coming off the pay-per-view, you have a natural buzz and there is like that, Matt, you know what Blood and Guts is, but you could argue you would have rather had another week to do some big promos and build it for, but that's the timing that they locked themselves into with this big show in Detroit next week. I would say overall, this build to Forbidden Door, I think has been a very bumpy road. Some of it controllable, some of it uncontrollable when it comes to the injuries. Danielson, I'm sure, was one that they were just crossing their fingers that he could get clearance and waited until they had to make the call, which they have done. So some of that was out of their control. And some of the other stuff, I just think it's been a... I think that this is one where you can see as the fan of promotions working together that it comes with a lot of bumps along the way of where we get to. I think we're going to get a hell of a show on Sunday, and maybe that's going to be the lasting legacy of this. But I would say I'm a little lower on what I see this one doing buys than I was like 3-4 weeks ago.
I am too. I think this is the show where we, you know, we're waiting for that big single match announcement. And I suppose it instead came in the form of a lot of disappointment. You know, with the way they were teasing this Bryan announcement, I think had most people believing before, you know, the reports about him being injured, had most people believing that he was just simply out here to confirm his participation in both matches. Not only did he come out to say that he wasn't going to be a part of it, he didn't even tell us who the replacement would be. Now, people can speculate, but I don't know if that necessarily translates to, you know, wanting to pop down however much, $50, however much these pay-per-views are these days, you know, to satiate that curiosity. We also had the announcement of Kazuchika Okada on this card, but it's in the form of a four-way and not in the form of what they originally teased, which was, you know, a singles encounter. Circumstances are totally different now, of course. I think some people may, if they're interested in the concept itself, are still going to, you know, decide to make an evening of it with their friends or by themselves and watch this professional wrestling show on a Saturday. But to me,
and historically, way, I mean, we're going back a long time ago, but you know, that first Invasion pay-per-view, like, it's not like that was the greatest. It was a great go home segment with Austin showing up to back up the WWF and everything. But I mean, it was, you look at that card, there was, you know, you had an RVD Jeff Hardy match, and then you had this 10-man tag. That's really like the big things that stood out on, but it was the concept and the concept of just WWF versus WCW, even, you know, with, you know, those first 4 weeks of that Invasion storyline and where you saw things going, and a very weakened WCW side on that main event did a gigantic number. And that tells me, like, these interpromotional shows, I don't think we should underestimate the concept and what it means. And the fact that this sold out this arena without a match announcement, I think that goes to show you that maybe we should be a little more optimistic on what people are just going to buy in on, the fact that it's promotion versus promotion and that being a strong incentive to buy the show.
Let's go through the card.
So we have, for the AEW Interim World Championship, John Moxley taking on Hiroshi Tanahashi. IWGP Heavyweight title, Jay White, Adam Page, Kazuchika Okada, and Adam Cole. All Atlantic Championship, Malakai Black, Pac, Miro, and Tomohiro Ishii. Women's Championship match between Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm. Winner take all for the IWGP and ROH World Tag Titles. FTR defending against Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan and Roppongi Vice. Will Ospreay defending his non-physical United States Championship against Orange Cassidy. Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Sammy Guevara against Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Shota Umino. Zack Sabre Jr. against The Mystery Man. And the Young Bucks, El Fantasmo, and Hiku Leo against the Dudes with Attitude. Sting, Darby Allin, Shingo Takagi, and head dude Hiromu Takahashi. Plus the buy-in with the Gun Club and Max Caster against the DKC, Kevin Knight, Alex Coughlin, and Yuya Uemura. Oh, was that announced as an 8-man? I thought it was announced. Oh, okay, so Billy's in it.
Billy's in it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
At least he's on the graphic, so.
Oh, then he's in it. Yeah, I just misread it as a six-man.
New Japan veteran Billy Gunn.
Of course. Well, there you go. So that's your card. It's a, it is a loaded show that I think it's, I think it's going to be a very strong show. But I do see this being a AEW show that I have definitely seen more of the criticism for the buildup, and some of it very justified.
No doubt the talent that's available for them to choose from is immense. And per head, you know, the amount of talent that is on the show is really incredible. I think, though, there are rightful criticisms about the matchmaking, and we can question how much politics played a part in, you know, the decision to have multi-man matches, to have, you know, whatever's going on with, like, what is it, the Andrade and not being on the show. People like Penta and Phoenix maybe having something to do with, you know, that whole AAA thing as well. It's not the card that I think a lot of us were hoping for when they announced the concept, but I mean, injuries, you know, what can you do? I think that it'll be a great show on paper, or sorry, it'll be a great show in execution. Coming out of it, I feel like next year is the show that I think, you know, we'll be looking towards as maybe fulfilling a lot of those dream match qualities. I think they will improve on it. I think also this show has to deliver a lot of surprises in the form of, you know, whoever this mystery opponent is for Zack Sabre Jr., in the form of maybe even a Kenny Omega appearance, just to appear, to step into the ring, to stare down one of the people in the IWGP championship match, for instance, or some rekindling of like the history. I will say, like, this is a show that's kind of ended up feeling more like, you know, AEW's version of Global Wars, with, you know, just them instead of Ring of Honor kind of assuming that home role. But the difference is AEW stars are not being overshadowed by New Japan stars. You know,
I don't think this is going to be a case where like New Japan runs the table. On a lot of those ROH shows.
Well, because a lot of those same New Japan stars are now in AEW, right? So it's very balanced, and I would say in many ways, like, sometimes the AEW talent overshadows the New Japan. So as a concept, I think it'll be successful. I hope to see a second version of it this year. Unfortunately, a bit plagued by, you know, some injuries.
Yeah. The Kenny Omega one is interesting. Like, I would say, I think, like, this is a show that if you wanted to have him do an appearance, this would maybe be the show to do it. If you even had just an update from CM Punk, just to get him out there in Chicago, you know, potential stuff like that you do have some angles or news coming out of the show as well. So there you go. That is Sunday. And a reminder that we will be live right after the pay-per-view Sunday night, live on this channel with a whole review of Forbidden Door. But there you go. Let's go over to the forum.
Let's go to some super chats. First of all, John, this comes to us from Carnage Rage, who sends $10. Thank you so much for your support, Carnage Rage. He says, I wonder who Brian Danielson's replacement is going to be. Is it going to be Jonathan Gresham? My thoughts might be Davey Richards. So a lot of people are suspecting Cesaro. That is the level of star that at least I think...
You can't do either of those two as a surprise in Gresham or Davey Richards.
Yeah, certainly not Davey Richards. You know, he's just not visible enough.
Revealed as a surprise on last weekend's pay-per-view.
Which I thought like worked probably for that show, but like for AEW and New Japan, I feel like you need somebody a bit higher. If it was Gresham versus, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., I think the crowd would be satisfied, but I think a good segment would still be disappointed. It could be him. You know, he's in their roster technically.
I would have, if it was Gresham, I would have no issue with Jonathan Gresham and Zack Sabre Jr., but I'm announcing that on TV. I'm not lingering that as a surprise because you're impacting Jonathan Gresham, who it's unfair to put him in that role when you're going to have 5 days of people speculating and hoping for someone of a level of a Cesaro, and Gresham comes out and it's such an it puts that match in the position where it now has to overcome, I think fan expectation being so high and then getting into what could be a really great match. So I couldn't imagine building him up as your big surprise.
I agree. And finally, we got a Jake from the Windy City who sends $2.25. Thank you for the support, Jake. He says, Excalibur is pro wrestling's David Croft.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with David Croft. I will Google him right now and hope that...
Well, you do that, and I will kick off our feedback from the forum.
Oh, he's the F1 commentator, of course. Okay, Crofty, yes.
Let's go to Eric from Cork, Ireland. That was a terrible show. I have no idea why anyone would be excited for a pay-per-view with this build. Apart from Jay White, we haven't heard from anyone from New Japan about who they are or why they want to be in any of these matches. The angle for the main event was Moxley and Tanahashi looking at each other while a bunch of guys, half of whom are not on the pay-per-view. Half of whom are not on the pay-per-view?
I think they're all on the show. I think they're all
like the Jericho
match.
Appreciation Society guys but I mean, you're also kind of, you know, you were also like that also doubles as your blood and guts setup for next week too.
And that's criticism in and of itself, isn't it? The fact that they're trying to shove so much into the one thing.
They have Okada in a four-way where the main focus is whether Adam Cole and Jay are friends, and they didn't even bother to announce the match until there was 20 minutes left to go on the go-home show. What exactly am I supposed to be excited about?
The concept, you know, the ability to see New Japan stars and AEW stars in the same ring together. They could have done a better job, I agree. I mean, in both the matchmaking and the setup.
I honestly do believe, like, this card is getting more negativity than I think is really warranted. I think if you're just looking at this card, like, I see a really great show, but I think it's the overall... a buildup to it is what people have the issue with. I don't think the end product is going to be like this show. You look at it, this looks like a really great show on paper.
Well, you could hit the randomizer with both of these rosters and come up with an incredible card. But I think when you put out the concept of a New Japan AEW co-promoted show called Forbidden Door, you're putting a lot of projections into people's minds of their dream scenarios. And how many of those dream scenarios have they necessarily hit on? And again,
it sounds like you wanted a lot more kind of like one-on-one matches where there would be wins and losses would be consequential. Yes. I think that's absolutely a very fair criticism for a show like this, where you don't want to have outs. You want to have like a Moxley Tanahashi and more of those. I don't think you get those top to bottom, but I think you do want to have like three of those, and Danielson Zach would have been one of them. And, you know, it's, and maybe there's the argument that let's just say you have a Cesaro. I think you could have spent that first segment building that up. So that is one of those matches going into Sunday. Like, man, we're getting Cesaro's first non WWE match since he left the company. It's against Zack Sabre Jr. And we've got, you know, it's not several weeks, but we at least have several days to anticipate this and look forward to it.
I agree. Like, the more I think about it, the more I feel like why they wouldn't announce Cesaro if that is indeed the name. And if it's not the name, then God help them, because I think they'll be facing way more backlash.
It has to be at an and who is out there that is at that level that it will be accepted as? Like,
I don't know. Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks versus Zack Sabre Jr. Sign me up. That match sounds awesome. But no, if it is Cesaro, like, would there not be more, like, would you not control the narrative a little bit better coming off of this show about, you know, how much people are looking forward to this pay-per-view if you have Cesaro's AEW debut match happening this Sunday to look forward to, rather than maybe, we don't know, somebody else?
Yeah, I think they're putting a lot of stock into the idea of the mystery, and I think part of that is that when they did it real big was teasing that mystery that turned out to be Christian on the pay-per-view. And you had a combination of that mystery and the Moxley Omega, the barbed wire death match that did a really good number. And I think they attributed a lot of that to the surprise and feeling that will help late buys at the end. And it's very hard to say if that's the right call or the wrong call when you don't know what the surprise is going to be.
Well, here's some dissenting opinion here from Johnny Sanchez, who says, I love this episode. I actually can't think the last time a Dynamite had a show where I loved every segment. They put on fantastic matches, especially that trios match. I hope Aussie Open do a run in AEW past Forbidden Door. While it's great to have Okada, I was hoping for a singles match, but beggars can't be choosers. Okay, I know some people may say Christian's promo might be tasteless with bringing in Luke Perry's death, and I won't argue with what they don't like, but I love this Christian. Reminds me of TNA Christian's Coalition era, which is what got me to watch TNA. No Tonko, but Luchasaurus can work in that role, I guess. Oh, the new Tonko here in Luchasaurus.
The problem solver, Luchasaurus.
So question, do you put the interim title on Tanahashi knowing he has to do G1 and lose some matches as well? Or do you go the safe route and put it on Mox?
I just don't see the point of going to the extent of introducing an interim title because someone is not around for the time being that we're going to put it on someone that's not going to be around for the time being.
And who could come back with like, I mean, G1 is not easy. It's like, you know, and we're talking about Tanahashi who's already beaten up. So yeah, I don't see it happening.
And Tanahashi is probably going to like be a 500 guy in the G1. Like I don't see like, yeah. There's always like the chance that you could do more with Tanahashi, but he has been scaled down from that. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't think it's the wrong call at all to put it on Moxley. I think you want to have your champion in Punk's absence. So that to me, I really don't see the argument for Tanahashi winning it.
He's already cutting promos about like, you know, being the greatest in the world. And you, that is a headlining bout right there for All Out, you know, if Punk is healthy.
I mean, to be quite honest, and I don't know if they could have that that kind of confirmation of when Punk is back, but if they felt strongly enough, that's a hell of a closing scene. Mm-hmm. Is Moxley, and then in Chicago, Punk comes out, and we're probably going to get the announcement on Sunday of where All Out is going to be. Mm-hmm. And if you go off the air with Moxley holding up that interim title, and Punk comes out in Chicago unexpected, and that's your match to build all summer to, mm-hmm. I think that's a hell of a main event to have for September.
Yeah.
Brian from New Jersey, I feel the build to Forbidden Door has been their weakest pay-per-view build yet, with too much held off until this final week, and of course a lot relying on a different company that also holds off on revealing full cards for big shows. Still, I thought tonight's Dynamite was pretty exciting with a number of hot matches to take in and Christian Cage's best promo in years. I still intend to watch Forbidden Door because it has some matches I'm willing to pay to see. Some I think might be undervalued going in. I have to think Daniel's replacement / newest Blackpool Combat Clubber is Claudio Castagnoli. If it's not, I just hope it's not Johnny Blackpool. Watch him as Johnny Hardy on Triple Mania?
I did not. No, how was Johnny Hardy?
It was, he just played Jeff Hardy.
Was it a good impression?
Moving on. Yeah. I mean, he did do it as a heel. So, I mean, for that reason, it did kind of work for that reason. But, but that was one where, yeah, they kept it as a mystery until the show itself. So, anyway.
Noah from Vaughn says, this show was awesome. Man, I love the back and forth here of discourse between our feedbackers. This show was awesome. The six-man tag was incredible, and they did a really good job hyping up the show on Sunday. Looks to be a stellar card, even with the noticeable absences. Really appreciated a build to the inter-promotional show, not having guys forget about their feuds for a month, and instead wearing t-shirts of the brand and fighting for brand supremacy. Any titles you think change hands on Sunday?
Yeah, certainly. I think you could have a case.
Well, one of them has to, because they're the ROH and IWGP are being held by the same people.
Right, right. I mean, you could have FTR retain,
but then they would win the IWGP tag.
Oh yeah. You're right. Yeah. So that one is guaranteed. You're guaranteed to get your All Atlantic champion coming out of this. I think you would want to switch something, and maybe. I don't know if I see Orange Cassidy being that guy, for instance. I don't see the IWGP title changing. Not a chance.
How about Rosa
on that
and
one.
Storm?
Possible. It doesn't feel like it's a big focused match on this show that I don't know. Like, that is one thing. For all the titles that they have, outside of the TNT title run, that aside, they don't typically trivialize title changes. I think that's why the TNT stuff really was like irritating to people, because as many titles as they've had, they do try to spread out your title changes and make them meaningful. And I would just see the women's one. It almost feels like a show where this is not going to be necessarily something all that remembered coming out of it.
I think Rose is just getting started with her run as well. So I think it's a big title defense for her, but I don't think she drops it either. Yeah, really. Outside of the tag team titles, like I'm not so sure if we have other changes, technically.
The last word goes to Benjamin. There was a fan sign at the opening of the show. It read, Gatorade should be thicker. I actually noticed this. This isn't necessarily a thought or opinion on the show, but the idea of Gatorade being thicker is something I find very disturbing. AEW really needs to cut down on the crowd shots of people on their phones. Danielson's promo was decent. I appreciate the flaccid crew of Coxman line. Yeah, thicker Gatorade would be gross.
What would it taste like? Like what consistency of liquid is this person suggesting? Like what is a thick liquid?
Like imagine it more of like a smoothie almost that you're drinking. Ooh. Of Gatorade. Yeah.
No, that's no good. There has to be something that's a bit more
Dude, I can't. I hate Gatorade, and it was when I was younger. I was on my cross country running team in like second or third grade, and it was always like everyone bought Gatorade. It was like the cool drink to have. And one of my friends was like, "You know what they put in Gatorade?" It's like, "No, what? They put sweat into Gatorade." It's like, "Oh, that's really gross. I'm never gonna drink Gatorade again." And that's always been one of those things stuck in my head. So that's kind of what I think of with Gatorade. Gatorade's a gross drink. It really is.
So you took some little kid's idea of, I don't know, some prank, and you've kept it with you your whole life. We're going to get sued now on this podcast because Coke is going to sue us for saying that there's sweat in their drink.
That's right. That's right. We'll probably get a claim on this video. I'm not saying it's true. And it's just something that was always stuck in my head afterwards. It's like I would drink Gatorade and I'd think of like sweat being in this. It's like... It wasn't a pleasant tasting drink to begin with. And now I've got something that I don't want to associate with it being in the drink too. So I was like, you know what? Water is very underrated. I don't hear too many people ever say, you know, what's a great drink. Water. It's water. Awesome. I love water. Great. I can have it any time of the day. It's the first thing I have when I wake up. It's great.
Water is very good, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with Gatorade. If you like it, that's fine. I don't think it needs to be thicker. You know, I think it's fine. Like
maybe it should be thinner.
Can it be thinner? Like what?
I don't know.
Air? Like
water.
I mean, is Gatorade not as thin as water?
I don't know.
What are we talking about here?
Okay, we're done. This is what Benjamin's introduced to us.
You know?
Look at this time. We've gone way too long on this show.
Okay. Anyway, one more super chat here from Hanzi, who sends $7. Thank you for the support, Hanzi. He says, you think it would ever be possible for Edge to show up down the line in AEW and him and Christian have one last run in a tag team prioritized company?
I mean, of course it would be possible. Like every contract comes to an end and then he has to make a decision. And I don't know when his contract is actually up, but it was like mid 2019, I believe, that he had signed that. It was like right around, wasn't it, like the Toronto SummerSlam where he did the spear on Elias? It was somewhere in there. Because they went over it on that, whatever it was, a 24 or something like that in on the network. Yeah, like it's totally possible. And I would think that, I mean, AEW was interested in him then, and I'm sure if he came due and he wanted to seek his options elsewhere, I'm sure there would be interest.
For the both of them, if they continue their careers, I mean, the ability to... I would hope that both of their contract terms are near each other's, because I think the ability to promote or at least tease some sort of Edge and Christian reunion should be a big deal for any professional wrestling company. Now, it probably means a whole lot more to AEW than it does for WWE.
Well, they had the option and they didn't want it. They put Christian in the Rumble and he wasn't signed.
You're right. So it means
they actively did not want it. So yeah, you can't say every wrestling company, because one actually did not want it and introduced him in a huge return and let him walk.
Great point. Absolutely valid point. But I think it means a whole lot to AEW and Edge's value to AEW if, you know, Christian was still there and they could promote that. But Edge is somebody who I could see, you know, being in a perfectly fine spot where WWE might be the better option. You know, they still see him as a top star. They're going to push him as one of the main draws on Raw. You know, like they're probably paying him really well. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends his career there.
All right. Thanks, Hanzi. Thank you for the super chat. And thank you to everyone that tuned in live tonight. We are going to be back on Thursday live at 1 p.m. Eastern time for the Post Daily News Show. We will be going through all the latest news. And then, of course, live Friday night for patrons at Rewind to SmackDown. 11 Eastern will be live. And again, Sunday night right after Forbidden Door. Is there anything you want to mention, Wei? MCU later tomorrow.
MCU later. Ms. Marvel, if you're watching the show, leave some feedback. If you're a patron at Post Wrestling, forum.postwrestling.com, and sign up to the Post Wrestling Cafe. You get a bunch of bonus shows, including all of our MCU later reviews, Rewind to SmackDown and Rampage this coming Friday night. Of course, you can tune in live or after the fact in archive form. Ask Away, that was just released, and then Sunday live, or at least live for everybody, actually, is our Forbidden Door review. If you're a double ice capper or a special patron, we're going to open up the phone line so you guys can get your thoughts in in person, or at least on video or through a video voice. Does that make sense?
That is
video voice. Yes.
I got it all down here. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We'll chat with you on Thursday. Good night.